In 1917, Our Lady appeared at Fatima to three small children. And among the many messages she gave them, she was calling on people to pray and to repent. She said, if people pray and repent, Russia will be converted. If not, she will spread her errors throughout the world. Now, in the spring of 1917, when these messages began, Russia had just lost World War I to Germany. And all the soldiers went home, they deposed the Tsar. And you'd think, what a backwards country this was. 3% literacy is all that they had. And you'd think, how could they spread errors throughout the world? But in the course of those 6 months, when people could have prayed, could have repented, they did not. And Russia went communist. There was the Red Revolution, the Red October. And this was the time when Russia began to sow its errors throughout the world. Well, very early on, the communism was not only about just no ownership of private property and ultimately the domination of the people, but more than that, it was about immorality, free association, no marriage. They undermined marriage wherever they would go. That was one of their policies. And by 1922, they passed the first law in the world for no-fault divorce, which is really unilateral divorce. When only one party has to choose, that it's all over. And they saw that as a stepping stone to the end of marriage itself. They didn't want marriage. They wanted people to stand naked before the all-powerful state, more empowered by the state than they were by their spouse. And so there was the beginning of the challenge to marriage and the spread of immorality. Well, Russia spread the same socialism and communism next into the universities of the West, in Europe and throughout America. Very early on, from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, well into the 60s after that, socialism and communist ideas were being spread through the universities and filtering down through the young people. That was, again, the spreading of Russia's errors. 1960, we get the advent of the pill. Jordan Peterson, not even a Christian at this point, Jordan Peterson says there were three enormous things that took place in the last century. One was the atomic bomb. Second was the invention of the transistor, which opened the way to the whole digital age. And the third was the pill. And the pill may well prove to be the most powerful, culture-changing thing that has occurred in the last 1,000 years, because it brought with it a sexual revolution. And with that, the breakdown of morality, the wounding of hearts, all kinds of unwanted pregnancies. It was followed by 1973, the opening of abortion. Again, another weakening of the life principle and the strengthening of marriage and family and of the moral discipline that it takes to hold families together. By 1975, most of the states in the United States had adopted no-fault divorce, again, better known as unilateral divorce, where only one party chooses to end the marriage, not because of infidelity, not because of abuse, but simply because they don't want it anymore. One of the things that that did is that it undermined men. Most of divorces are filed by women by a large margin, and men lost their voice, lost their leadership in the family because of fear that it would all end and all be taken away. Again, catastrophic changes were underway throughout this last century. Then from that, with the pill firmly in their grasp, women entered the workforce. And with women in the workforce, daycare sprouted up everywhere, all kinds of daycare facilities. And now we've got all sorts of children with issues, attachment issues, because they weren't properly nurtured and bonded to their own parents. Something is amiss in the whole culture. And you recognize that Our Lady told Sister Lucy, and Sister Lucy told this to the world before she passed as an old woman in the 1990s. She said, the last battle with Satan will be over marriage and family. You thought it was going to be a nuclear war. You thought it was going to be about politics. It's about marriage and family, because the whole world turns on marriage and family. And that's where we stand today. That's the challenge which is before us. You and I recognize that the changes that have come about have not made us better. The progressives want to say that, oh, everything's wonderful. The panacea is just down the road, just a little bit further. More gender confusion, more changes, it'll all be fine. More peaceful protests. And yet you and I see that Minneapolis is burning. Very often the streets are empty. Carjackings are frequent. We find rapes going on, school shootings taking place. We find the family breakdown has been devastating to an entire nation. And more people are dependent upon the government, making the government all-powerful. Again, these are enormous changes that have taken place, and not for the good. And you see the cascade of events. not just one, any single one event, which any one of them could have been bad enough, but as a cascade, they show enormous harm has been done to our culture. Now, it's time for us on Father's Day to look at, where does this leave fathers? Well, there's a wonderful woman by the name of Deborah Savage, Dr. Deborah Savage. She's a scholar, and she notes the differences between men and women. Much ignored, much rejected today when we want to say that men and women are interchangeable. You can have two dads, you can have two moms, you can change your gender. Gender doesn't matter. And she'll point out in a scholarly way, it does matter. We are different. She'll point out wonderful things. There's not only a feminine genius, there's a masculine genius. There's a way that men are called to do things. And it goes all the way back, she'll say, to Genesis. And there she points out that man in the garden was alone with God for some period before the appearance of woman. And this has important implications for the place he occupies in the created order and the traditional understanding of the man as the head of a household. Man's first contact with reality is of a horizon otherwise contains only lower creatures. Man named all of the animals. He was given this charge over all of the animals. And only there he found that he was also incomplete, which led to the building up of the woman. Now, man's orientation towards things is clearly part of God's design. Women are oriented towards people. Men are oriented towards things. And you have to recognize that's not a bug. It's a feature. It's the way we were made. It's for the good of us and for the good of us all. Now, this man's orientation is part of God's design. And man is tasked with naming all of the animals, which brings him, including the woman there, into a dominion, if you will. Now, it says, it can be thus said that man knows things in a way that a woman simply does not. Again, Dr. Deborah Savage. St. Thomas Aquinas went so far as to argue that Adam must have received a distinct preternatural gift, a special kind of infused knowledge which made it possible for him to name the goods of creation. He excels at discovering what things are, how they're to be distinguished from one another, and what they're used for. That's the male gift. We're different. That's the way we were made. And again, man was put into the garden to till it and to keep it. Man is actually the only one who gets a specific job. It's not until the woman appears that he grasps his purpose. It's to exercise his strength and his work and his genius in service to her. That's what the plan of God is all about. Again, it's manifestly true that man creates outside of himself. Women create inside of themselves, bringing about new life for the world. We're that different, that opposite. Pope John Paul, writing about the dignity of woman, argues that the feminine genius is grounded in the fact that all women have the capacity to be mothers, and that this capacity, whether fulfilled in a physical or spiritual sense, orients her towards others, towards persons. Girls and women seem to know from the beginning that they're meant for relationship. Well, it takes men a bit longer to know that. Again, this woman's genius, this feminine genius, is found there. It's part of her inner life. And she knows the standard of excellence is not efficiency, but the well-being of persons. How different that is from men. We want to make everything efficient, but sometimes at the expense of persons. And it's the women who come back and say, no, this is actually about people and their well-being and their flourishing. So God's plan for man and woman is lifelong marriage and family, societal instability, directly connected to a failure and an undermining of that great plan of God. You look around the cities and you say, are we really better off now than we were in 1930? Are we really safer? Are our streets more peaceful? Are we well cared for now, better than we were then? I wonder. These are the challenges. And when you see the breakdown of all of these things, the carjackings, the shootings, the rundown houses, the drugs, it's the absence of father and the absence of marriage which is at the very core. So these things we must pay attention to. And on Father's Day, it's a good day to say those things. Now, how should we raise our children? Now, there's a wonderful speaker by the name of Nick Freitas, a retired Green Beret, a strong Christian and a great speaker. And he's gonna point out some wonderful qualities of masculinity and of fatherhood that we are to protect, to provide, and to lead. And fathers are to challenge their children out of their comfort zone, to be stretched, to make them grow, to encourage them so they can meet the challenges and be successful. That's what we do. Some of the important qualities of femininity: to love, to nurture, to make others feel cared for, to bring beauty and comfort to a home and to a family. How different we are, how necessary we both are. Part of a man's job is to challenge and to stretch his children, to bond with them through the challenges. Sometimes you see young fathers and they're taking their child in one hand and holding them over their head and spinning them around, and the moms are aghast that someone would do such a thing. And yet this is how we play. We play differently. And early on, we find the dads giving them horsey rides around the living room. As they get older, there's more challenges. There's more challenges we bring to them to do hard things and even dangerous things. Sometimes that makes mom nervous, but dads need to do these things. Sometimes the boys will fail or get hurt. And it's important for them to engage in the actual world outside of the home, to find that the world is not easy, that it isn't safe. And we learn to do what it takes to work, to succeed through the challenges. Dads, we do that. It could be early on helping them to run the lawnmower. It could be later on with oil changes or tire changes. It could be working in the garage. It's stuff where we stretch them out, not just by sports. That's somebody else's domain. It's fine if they play a few games, but when that becomes their new religion, many other things are lost. Many challenges are not discovered. They're not met. Now, men need to show love for their children. That looks different than for boys and for girls. Fathers, you need to tell your daughters that you love them. You need to show that you love them by your actions and notice and affirm them when they do something special with their hair or put on something pretty and you tell them that they're beautiful. You need to teach them how they should expect to be treated by a man. Boys are a little different. Not so much needing to be told that they're loved, they need to be affirmed that they're capable, that they have what it takes. Fathers teach their sons to build things and fix things, and then they help them do it, and then they let them do it by themselves, and then they praise them for what they've done. 10 times out of 10, a boy would rather hear his dad tell him that he's proud of him than that he loves him. There's something accomplishing there. There's something about the male genius that needs that type of affirmation. Moms can also help their sons to be good men, showing them that you need them. Maybe there's a jar that's too tough to open. Maybe it's some baggage that you need carried that they can do for you, and they'll feel proud that they did something for their mom. And they're learning how to be men. Men, you also need to prioritize your marriage. Do not neglect your wife or take her for granted. Take her on dates. Tell her that you love her, that you still choose her. Tell her that you love her and that you still find her beautiful. It's important. These are things that we need to do. Sometimes you could even flirt with your wife in appropriate ways in front of your kids, and they'll roll their eyes, but just the same, they'll be glad that mom and dad are together. It's a good thing. We can make a list of things that husbands and wives want. Women want from their husbands to feel safe, to be provided for, to be loved. A woman has a great peace and joy when she's secure in her husband's love, and knows the family's taken care of, doesn't have to worry about safety or financial struggles. Men want from their wives passion and peace. Physical passion is probably obvious, but men need intimacy with their wives. Remember what St. Paul says? Husbands, your body belongs to your wife. Wife, your body belongs to your husband. Do not deny one another except by mutual consent and only for a time, lest you be tempted. Wow, that's largely unheard of today. But there it is, God teaching us through St. Paul. St. Paul is saying here, don't put one another on a starvation diet. Pope John Paul reminds us, intimacies are the food of the marriage. Don't take one another for granted. Show tenderness, even outside of times of intimacy. Men want peace in their homes. A man wants to fight and work hard outside the home. He wants peace inside the home. Woman doesn't have to try to relieve the burdens of protecting and providing. She needs to make it worth it. And when women make it worth it, a man will slay dragons as long as he feels appreciated and respected. Nick Freitas adds one more ingredient that every man should have in his life. He needs a violent or dangerous hobby. Hunting, shooting, boxing, martial arts. Not just something demanding like jogging, but something that gives him and his family a confidence that he can handle himself in dangerous situations and protect his family. Hardly known today, men need that. It's part of our greatness. So here's the final thing. Men, you're the head of the family. That means you're also the spiritual head of your family. You don't have to be more knowledgeable or more devout than your wife, but you must be the leader of the family in fulfilling duties to God in your life and in your home. We make sure the kids always get to Mass, even when we're on vacation, even when we're traveling. God comes first. We teach them about honesty, about purity of heart and body. We teach them these good things. We protect and provide for our families. We lead them in virtue and in faith. These are the qualities that we want to note, that we want to commemorate, that we want to lift up, especially today on Father's Day. May God bless all the fathers. Help them to be good spiritual guides for their families.